What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. On this week's show, we'll share an hour of words and music with Paul Thomas, an important Naptown bass player, producer, and bandleader, best known for his work with the Circle City Band. The Circle City Band's 1983 single, Magic, has become an underground soul classic with over a million streams online. Paul Thomas played some of his earliest gigs on Indiana Avenue. He was just a teenager when he performed in Avenue clubs with legendary band leaders like Billy Wooten and Harvey Cook. Paul's family has a deep history on the Avenue. His grandparents lived in Lockfield Gardens, and his mother, Hazel Ann, ran a successful hair salon in the Avenue neighborhood. Stay tuned for the next hour as Paul Thomas shares his memories of the Avenue. We'll start this week's show with a classic electro soul track from the Circle City Band. From 1985, this is Party Lights.
Tell me, can you see those party lights shining all so bright?
That was the Circle City Band with Party Lights. Our guest this week is the Circle City Band's founder, Paul Thomas. He recently spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's join their conversation as Paul shares his memories of the Avenue.
You said your grandparents lived in Lockfield back in the day.
At one point, because my mother was raised in Lockfield, my mother and my uncle, yeah, they lived in Lockfield. And then, I'm going to be honest with you, there was a point where my grandmother and my grandfather separated. And my grandfather, they got divorced. He moved to L.A. And my grandmother and my aunt were kind of big socially. And I've got pictures. I forgot to mention this. My grandmother, like, going out on the town. I have some with my grandfather, but that was when he came back from L.A. But younger pictures of my grandmother, she was, like, out on the town with, like, Duke Ellington and the Mills brothers and Jackie Robinson when they came to the Avenue. And
what was your grandma's name?
Lama? Thomas.
Thomas?
Duke Ellington. I think one or two of his musicians, when he came here to play on the Avenue. That's when they had the Green Book hotels and stuff. They didn't want to stay in the Green Book hotels. So she allowed them to stay in the two-bedroom apartment upstairs on Pershing, 1116. That's the house that I have my production studio and everything in now. I told you, Studio B, my bedroom and all that. They actually stayed up there while they were here playing on the Avenue.
Wow.
And I got pictures of her and Duke Ellington, like with her with the mink coat on and him suited and booted. And,
you got to get
I will send you a copy. I was all up in through Lockfield, especially the playground. I'll never forget the Dust Bowls. My stepdad, Edward Hurt, they called him Easy. He was a star for Shortridge like Oscar was for Addicts. But he was Halle Bryant in them's time. and Flapp in them times. So he went to the Globetrotters for a bit. But he went to the Army. He went to the service, too. But anyway, he was at the beginning of those Dust Bowls, and for a long time after he got older, he was one of the main referees in Lockfield, the first original Dust Bowls and stuff. So I remember all that, too. And my mother hustling water and beer and all kind of stuff, you know, over there with the coolers. I remember having to lug them coolers from over there.
How would you, if someone had never heard of the Dust Bowl, how would you describe it to them?
The Dust Bowl? Oh, man, like Rutgers in New York. You've seen...
it's street ball, right?
Yeah, yeah, street balls. But these dudes, crazy, like Boo Ellis and Flapp and them, and my stepdad, Easy, and Oscar and them, all of them, they were playing the Dust Bowl.
Yeah, it was like a basketball.
And then they would come from other towns like Detroit and Chicago and compete in this. It was like the Rutgers, like... Yeah. Very much like
it was a famous basketball tournament located pretty much in Lockfield. Right?
At that playground. That was the only place it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it moved out of there from, you know, as Lockfield got disbanded.
Yeah.
And moved over there for a minute. It was at Watkins. And then it kind of like, they had it at Douglas too, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of traveled. It was popular.
Yeah. And Paul, I wanted to ask about your mom, who seemed like a very influential figure in the Indiana Avenue community. Mm-hmm. Hazel Ann Hurt. She had Hazel Ann's Beauty Mart, right? Mm-hmm. At 832 Northwest Street. Is that the address that you remember?
North Street?
Yeah.
West North Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you said it backwards. West North Street.
Okay,
Like North and Blake.
Okay. And it
was would be west because it would be west of Meridian.
Gotcha. She was trained by Madam Walker. And was it near the Walker Theater?
Yeah, right down. I mean,
right, in the shadow of Walker, right?
Before they kind of blocked it off with those parking garages in IUPUI, you could go right up North Street, and then when you got to West Street, Madam Walker was right there.
Yeah.
The Walker Theater and the Beauty College actually was around the corner, though. It was like on West Street, I believe. I wasn't living then. You know what I'm saying? I mean, when I was born, she already had the beauty shop and all that. But I think the original college or the school. Beauty school was on West Street.
In your mom's beauty shop, Hazel Ann's Beauty Mart, that was there from the 50s, 60s, 70s. Do you know what years it ran exactly?
It ran all the way up until the 80s when my uncle had to sell it.
Yeah.
Because you can see it right there on the picture. Like I said, maybe a few years before he actually sold it. But then she moved it onto Fairfield and College, like right across from Big Fellas.
Yeah.
She was there for the longest, and that's when she trained a lot of beauticians and stuff there also. She trained a lot of beauticians that became, you know, really successful beauticians out of that beauty salon.
So she was in the Avenue neighborhood for almost 30 years, over 30 years.
Yeah, most definitely.
And one thing you told me recently that I thought was real interesting, you were commenting on the relationship between the music business and the beauty business, especially hair, because entertainers got to get their hair done.
Well,
was your mom doing hair for the local entertainers?
Well, here's what happened. The Madam Walker... basically, the Madam Walker students became big-time hair people in the hair business, as it like into Jerry Curls and all that kind of stuff, and hair products with that, especially relaxers and moisturizers and all that kind of stuff. So, like a couple of the big wigs, Henry Childry, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, and Henry Bundles.
The Bundles family.
Well, they were partners. Yeah, well, Childry was very important. They both came out of Madam Walker hair products, salesmen, and doing the marketing and all that kind of stuff. So they started Summit Laboratories, which also merged in with, it was kind of like, these are the manufacturing plants for these products. And they'll go out and be like a whole vat or a whole batch of relaxer, and then it'll go get bagged up as different relaxers. They still do that now to this day. You know what I'm saying? Do you think every jar of peanut butter is all different kinds of peanut butter? No, a lot of that stuff's the same peanut butter, just got a different label on it. Well, anyway, they built relationships. That's through my mom. My mom was like a test space for a lot of these products, especially when it comes to relaxers and different things like that, because my mother was really famous for relaxing your hair and cutting it and doing with the curling irons. That was an art form to that with the curlers. But anyway, and she trained a lot of people on it also. But anyway, the music thing always got, like George Clinton and them. They came out of the barbershop, and George Clinton was frying people's hair. Well, anyway, the bands here, we started merging relationships through my mother's connects with, like, the whole Midnight Star, The Deal, Manchild. No, actually, Manchild was over. Midnight Star, The Deal, myself. Was all sponsored by Elasta Hair Products. And we all kept the Jerry Curls and the cuts and stuff. And I actually went out on the road promoting Elasta and passing out my records to all these different hotels and stuff to down in Atlanta, Miami, definitely back and forth from Chicago and Detroit and stuff like that. But and we'd be staying in hotels, and they would play Magic and all that. And I got a lot of different connects from that.
Yeah.
You know, but all of the bands didn't pay nothing to get their hair done. They were going out on tour. So it was always merged with the beauty business.
Here locally.
Entertainers got to look good.
Here locally, was your mom doing hair for the local entertainers? Did she do mostly do women, men,
everything?
She was
doing
hair
for everybody at one point, at one time. And then she wasn't doing, her hairdressers were doing. And they were renting booth space, making their own money, because it was always popping down there in that area for a long time.
Let's pause and listen to another classic electro soul track from the Circle City Band from 1984. This is My Place.
I've been watching you, and you've been watching me. Baby, let's go to my place.
That was the Circle City Band with My Place. Our guest this week is the Circle City Band's founder, Paul Thomas. Paul recently spoke with WFYI's Tao Long. Let's return to the conversation as he shares his memories of the Lockfield Rebellion, an uprising that occurred in the Avenue neighborhood in June of 1969.
And Paul, one thing I've been wanting to ask you about for a while, we went back and forth about this on Facebook one time, and you seem like you remember this more vividly than a lot of people. I think it was in 1969 in the summer, there was an uprising in Lockfield. They called it the Lockfield Rebellion. As you mentioned earlier—
Where Big Ten burnt down.
Right. They went and burnt down the Big Ten market. A police officer was shot that night. This was like a very significant uprising here.
It was crazy.
That nobody talks about.
All I remember was all the people— out screaming and hollering, and I was riding around on a bike. I do remember that, and I saw that the grocery store burning. I mean, everybody saw that was over there, you know. And I tried to stay out the way because it was just a crazy time where people were getting hurt just from being around too close to some stuff or whatever. But I was yelling. You know, I remember yelling "Black Power" and all kind of stuff because the way we were treated, it was crazy, man. It was real crazy, and I was on. I guess I'm fortunate that I was on kind of like the tail end of it, or the end of it where we started getting some kind of power. Cause man, I would have hated to come up around that slavery stuff, which I'm not criticizing or being it because they had to do what they had to do, but. It angered us be learning about the history enough of they allowed us to learn about. But
how did that change the neighborhood, the uprising in Lockfield? Do you remember kind of what the vibe was on the street after that happened?
I know there was a lot of anger, a lot of despair. But I'm going to tell you, back then, man, it was a multitude of things to be angry and despaired about. I mean, that was still... I think that when Vietnam going on and people were getting transformed into junkies and crazy people. And then it just got worse and worse.
How old were you when that happened? 69.
I was like 10, 11. Yeah. I was like No, 69, I was 12 years old. Yeah. I was born in 57.
You said you were saying black power. Did you have a sense that this was something bad or good for the community?
I had a sense of revolt. I had a sense of being angered and seeing everything, not only there, but seeing everything on the TV. See, TV was, it was telling you stuff. And then people were getting murdered, like assassinations. Not, I ain't talking about the Kennedys. I'm talking about all the black assassinations of people that wasn't doing nothing, but just telling the truth and trying to just walk peacefully to protest injustices.
Yeah.
And then you got the other ones that are coming and burning people's lawns down and then blowing up kids in churches and, you know. Come on, man.
You were young at the time.
You were... That ain't nothing but anger. Right. Right. You know. So I'm, me running around screaming black power was just like a mosquito on a big bull or something.
Yeah. You were young at the time, obviously, mm-hmm. but were you aware of the ways that members of the black community were trying to organize? Like the Snooki Hendricks Black Radical Action Project, the Indianapolis Black Panther
Absolutely.
Party was going into Lockfield trying to raise the consciousness Absolutely. Of the people. What did you know about that? What do you remember about that?
They were doing, that was in at the beginnings of the, going into the Black Expo and things like that. And, yeah, things were getting done to do positive things. And, yeah, that's when we were getting – that's when we were able to do creative things. That one of the things that I got to do with my music back then, we played in the Gospel Shower of Stars – at the convention center for the Black Expo. And it was I don't know if it was the first, but it was back then when it first started. But I remember we played in the same convention center hall that the big concert was going on later on that night. And it was like 5,000 people there, but it was all gospel. Al Hobbs and all of them, and Charles Williams and all the big wig people that you're talking about, they was all there in full effect. Of course, my mom knows all of them, probably cut all of them's hair or whatever. But we got to play in that, and it was huge, man. I remember I was scared, you know. Not scared, nervous. 5 minutes, that was gone, though, because I'm in my element. I'm playing bass, so I'm getting to be just another level.
I wanted to ask, you started playing music young, and I wanted to ask you about that. You know, you grew up right in the... along the strip of Indiana Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that the Avenue was dead in the 1960s, but there were still a lot of clubs. You mentioned Place
dead.
To Play, Blue
no,
Eagle.
In the 60s, no.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the...
Sunset.
Sunset was still going.
Sunset was still happening.
Tell me about some of the clubs that were there and kind of what you knew about it.
The Place to Play, the Blue Eagle, the...
J&J
Pink
Lounge.
Poodle, J&J Lounge, the Downbeat, the Sun... I already said the Sunset.
When did you become aware of these clubs? You said you were playing as a teenager in the clubs.
I knew about them because, oh, I forgot, Al's British Lounge.
Yeah, right.
My uncle actually owned that building, and he and Al rented from my Uncle Stanley. But mainly from my mom and my family. You know, but then when I started playing with people like Billy Wooten and Harvey Cook.
How old were you when you first played in one of the clubs on the Avenue? You say you're 16?
I was like 15 or 16 with Billy Wooten. And they would put like a hat on me because I was pretty tall. When I got in, I shot up when I got in high school. When I was 14, I shot up to 6'1". And I didn't have no hair on my face, but if you put like, a hip-looking clothes and a hat, you know. But they weren't disguising me. It was just making me blend in. But I was like known I wasn't going to drink, and I had like a pass to being with them, but down on the same thing down on the Avenue, but I was dressing like them to be, like looking like I'm supposed to be there, like a musician. They said, dress like a musician. That's
what memories of that, the ambience of the neighborhood, being in the clubs, what stays in your mind from those experiences?
People just hooking up to have fun. And really being fans of the music and the entertainment. But it was all to feel good. Now it seems like it's going more into wanting to be hyped or either, you know, I don't know. It's a different vibe.
Sure.
But everybody was like what they call grown and sexy back then. Mm.
Stay tuned. Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from Paul Thomas after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Our guest this week is Paul Thomas, an important Naptown bass player, producer, and bandleader, best known for his work with the Circle City Band. In 1984, Paul co-wrote and produced a classic electro-hip-hop single titled Time to Throw Down, featuring vocals from the WTLC disc jockey Ricky Clark. We'll listen to that track now. This is the Ricky Clark Company with Time to Throw Down.
We are gathered here to blow your mind and throw down on this dance floor.
Move your body across the floor.
That was the Ricky Clark Company with Time to Throw Down, produced by our guest this week, Paul Thomas. Paul is best known for his 1983 single, Magic. Paul discussed the recording of Magic during a 2017 conversation with WFYI's Kyle Long.
So I came back home started writing and got back with a couple of buddies of mine that had a studio, Gary Schatzlein. And he had a studio down on Illinois called TRC, and he let me come in and start kind of like just experimenting, writing some songs. But in the meantime, let me back up. While I was out there, I also met George Cacciadorian, who was Bootsy Collins' manager at the time. And through the New Birth Connection and a couple of other people, he listened to my stuff and told me he could get me a record deal if I could come up with my own project. So I went back home and talked to Gary, and Gary let me come in the studio on spec time. In the meantime, this guy right here came back home. He had been in New York doing, he had gotten signed to Sugar Hill Records, and he brought some new gear that he had got home. And I said, man, I got this studio time down here, man. Come down and hang out. That's where we ended up doing these tracks right here. That
yeah, you're
got
talking
the
about Reggie
for.
Griffin for people
Reggie
listening
Griffin,
at
yeah.
home. Yeah,
he brought the drum machine and the vocoder and a keyboard. He had just got a Voyager keyboard and came down there. And that's my kickoff on having my own record out.
So that's how you kind of put your sound together, was through this equipment you had access to through Reggie.
Yeah, he came and helped me, and now that I think about it, it came back full circle to where it's me and him ended up like in his basement, ended up doing that, and while I was doing that, instead of me shopping it for a record deal, Ricky Clark and Leonard Scott were coming down there to rent studio time with for the Ty Scott
gospel record label here in
and India. Ricky heard that and he said, man, what are you going to do with that music? I said, I'm going to try to get a deal. He said, we're going to put out a secular label. And they asked me, he said, I'm going to talk to Leonard about putting your music out there. Would you be interested? Yeah, so they pressed it, and I didn't want it to be called. I didn't know what I was going to call it at the time because it was all me except for some of the stuff that he helped me with. But I didn't want to be like the forefront person, like Paul Thomas. I didn't know what I was going to call it. And they were going to call the record label Circle City Records. So I said, well, why don't we just call this Circle City Band? Because I didn't want my name on it as being like the artist, like a solo artist. And that's how they came up.
Let's pause and listen to the Circle City Band's classic 1983 single, Magic.
That magic from your sparkle in your eyes makes me realize I know that you're the only one for me. Just like a flash of light, you came into my life just like a fire. You gave me love so strong.
That was the Circle City Band with Magic. Our guest this week is the Circle City Band's founder, Paul Thomas. Paul recently spoke with WFYI's Tao Long. Let's return to the conversation.
Who were some of your favorite bands when you were coming up at a young age? You know, you're a bass player. There are many great bass players here. Lester Johnson, Red Massey. Who was influencing
you? Lester Johnson.
You never heard of him?
I'm messing with him. Lester Johnson. Who are Ebony Rhythm, hands down.
Yeah.
I mean, Ebony Rhythm, like, raised me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then after that, I mean, you know, I knew I was fortunate to get to jam with, I like to say it, I'm their only bass player, but Funk Incorporated. Jimmy Mumford especially. Plugged me in with Bobby Watley, and they knew all knew Hazel Ann, so I was, you know, got a pass to come in. I was a little, I wasn't no little kid, but I was like 17 or 18 in, and you know, that was a big influence because that music matured me musically, you know, being able to jam with old heads like that, and then the jam sessions was really how we defined ourselves creatively as musicians and technically, you know? Because, man, we used to go through some real strenuous processes of trying to achieve approval. You know, there was, be like, it wasn't for the weak at heart. You know, you could get shamed if you had a, you know, if you were soft, man, you get called out because you had to be correct or you get a lot of criticism. I didn't have a problem with criticism. And I was a quick learner anyway. And I was very creative. Still am.
Was there a bass?
I'm not bragging. It's just real.
Yeah. Is there a bass player from that era that not a lot of people know about that meant a lot to you and that you think more people should know about?
Chester Buddy Sims. Hmm.
Who'd he play with?
Everybody local.
Yeah. Who did he have a main band?
Except for Ebony Rhythm Funk.
Okay, right.
Lester never gave up that realm to nobody.
He never had like a main
never
band?
Never went Manchild either.
Yeah.
AJ and Lester held their post down to the wheels fell off. Buddy played with everybody. Everybody
session
in the city
player.
Knew Buddy
yeah.
playing
gotcha.
Bass.
Yeah.
Just like Ricky Knox.
Understood.
That's another one.
Yeah.
But Buddy and Ricky are on that same level. But they're all on the levels with Lester and AJ and you know, and me.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
And anyway,
no doubt.
But and Red was
Massey.
Solid, but Buddy was outstanding and Ricky Knox was outstanding.
And Paul, I did want to ask you too about just kind of wrapping up to reflect on the legacy of Indiana Avenue. You know, a lot of the places that were part of your life as a young person and that are an important part of the city's history were just wiped out, torn down. They didn't even give it a thought.
Not just nightclubs and stuff
right.
like that.
You know, neighborhoods.
Like, Tyler's Market
yeah.
and all that. Hyder's Market and then Tyler.
Yeah, I've heard about
Mr. Tyler's
Tyler.
Store.
Yeah.
He had a department store. He had a, like a, what they call them, like a diner that had the ice cream.
Yeah, yeah. Malt shop.
Yeah, malt shop. Tyler's Malt,
yeah.
man.
Whoa. Yeah. Do you think the city has done a good job of educating us about this history? What
no.
reflect on that? Does it
no.
anger you that?
Doesn't anger me, but it just makes me have more to do.
Yeah.
They just left that hole open for me to go through, like Barry Sanders or somebody.
Yeah. So you feel optimistic that there's work to do that you can be a part of to educate
Absolutely.
People? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And I want to set it up where it doesn't stop, even after I'm gone.
Yeah. You talked about, as a youth, having that anger, that feeling of revolt against the system. Do you have any – you don't have any of that anger about how the city mishandled the neighborhood, the history, the lack of respect for that history?
I don't – it's not anger anymore. Yeah. It's not forgotten, though, and it should not be forgotten. It should be taught so that it doesn't happen again. And there should be things done, in my opinion, to make up for it.
Yeah.
And if all they got is money, then so be it.
Yeah.
You know, like they said, Black Lives Matters. Well, put some of these people that are creative, that have things that can benefit and be productive, not destructive. Give them the backing that they need, the real backing, not just, you know, the kibbles after you done stole, you know, all the meat, you know, and really develop this city into a, man, there's a lot that could be spotlighted that could come out of this city if they really got behind some of these things for real, like they have done always in Los Angeles and always in New York. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not just talking about the entertainment business. I'm talking about business, period. Hmm. And especially education.
Yeah. In some ways, Indiana Avenue was like a training ground for you as a young musician.
Absolutely.
Played some of your first professional gigs there.
Absolutely.
As an artist, as a musician, how do you feel about being part of that historic legacy of music on Indiana Avenue?
How do I feel
Avenue?
About it?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I feel honored and blessed. Most definitely. And that's why I want to preach it, so to speak, literally.
Our guest this week has been Paul Thomas, an important Naptown bass player, producer, and band leader, best known for his work with the Circle City Band. We'll end this week's show with another electro classic from the Circle City Band. This is Gladiators.
We come to your town from miles around to spread a little of this Circle City sound.
Shock the house. Shock the house.
That's all the time we have this week. Thanks to our guest, Paul Thomas, and thank you for tuning in. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long, and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.